Welcome to Periodical Radio, the program about magazines and journals. I'm your host, Steve Black, librarian at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, and author of the book Serials in Libraries, Issues and Practices. This installment of Periodical Radio is about the scholarly journal Portal, Libraries and the Academy. Portal is written by and for college and university librarians. Its peer-reviewed articles address library administration, information technology, and information policy. Each quarterly issue contains a guest editorial, 5 or 6 research articles, and approximately 5 book reviews. Portal is produced both in print and online through the Project Muse database of full-text online journals. Johns Hopkins University Press began publication of Portal in 2001, when many members of the editorial board decided to leave the Journal of Academic Librarianship to launch a new journal. I'll let my guest tell that story. It was a successful launch. Portal was runner-up for the Best New Journal of 2001 award from the Council of Editors of Learned Journals, and it's now in its 7th year of publication. My guest is Dr. Charles Lowry, a founding executive editor and current editor of Portal. He is Dean of Libraries at the University of Maryland, College Park. Charles, thank you very much for taking time in your busy schedule for Periodical Radio. First, can you describe for our audience the scope of Portal's coverage?
Well, Portal was originally conceived as a journal that would deal with academic librarianship, but from a slightly different perspective than we have come to appreciate with some of the other key journals in this space, such as JAL or CNRL. And that was that we wanted to try and think about the library in the larger context as a institutional element within higher education. So we wanted very much to do two things, to emphasize two things. Number one, that it would be in an international journal, and gradually it's come more to be that. And we also wanted to have a greater participation from outside of the library per se. That is to say, we welcomed research articles and thought pieces that engaged the faculty as well from the user perspective for academic libraries. And we've accomplished that in some measure. I can't say that we have gone as far as we might have wished, but we've had a significant number of journals or a number of articles that have been reflective of the idea of bringing the user perspective, jointly written by librarians and faculty members. And we've also had members of the editorial board who were not librarians.
What topic areas are of most interest to your readers in broad terms?
Well, that's a rather tough one. I think that what we've tried to do with Portal is not to pigeonhole ourselves, but to deal with some of the more leading-edge issues. And so what we find often is that Portal articles revolve around not just questions of library operations and how to manage those, but some of the leading-edge areas such as assessment, policy decisions around information. And I've heard some of my own library faculty refer to it as a journal that emphasizes things that are of direct interest to the administrative perspective. And I think in some measure that's fair, but not about management and administration per se, as so much as about the top-level issues in academic libraries. We don't focus on the specific elements of librarianship quite so much, although you certainly will find articles here about instructing graduate students, conducting digital reference, that sort of thing. But again, we try to keep the articles focused in a way that lets them speak to the larger academic library community and to larger concerns.
There's an interesting story behind the creation of Portal. Could you share the story of what happened to the Journal of Academic Librarianship and how Portal came to be?
Oh, my. Well, I've written about it a fair amount. There's my first editor as when I moved from to the direct management of the journal as editor after Gloriana stepped down, Miss Gloriana St. Clair. And so I'll repeat some of what was there. I was at the time that Portal was founded a member of the Journal of Academic Librarianship's board. I was a feature editor and was responsible for the technology feature and had been for some years. Dick Daugherty and Ann Daugherty, when they still were the sole proprietors of JAL, asked me to do that. I was at Carnegie Mellon at the time. JAL was thereafter sold to a small publisher, and it continued to be quite successful. I continued with my contributions, and then they sold to Elsevier. And there was a natural, I think, concern on the part of the board, and we brought it to the Elsevier management that we did not want to see our journal, and I say that as a considered thing because I think there was really a strong sense of ownership in this board of the journal and its historic importance to academic librarianship. We did not want to see this journal escalate rapidly in price, and we wanted some commitment from Elsevier about the pricing arrangements and what they would be like. And failing in getting any kind of expression of even interest in our concern, we decided that we would step down and create another journal that we felt was responsive to the particular value concerns that we had. And we did that. And we were, I thought, at the time, and I still do today, very lucky that we easily found a willing publisher who was eager to go forward with establishing a new journal in a space that had been long occupied by several other titles, and that was the Hopkins Press. So we were lucky to have them and their support, and I think that we were a fairly successful journal almost from the first issue. We were very quickly cited heavily and appeared in the ISI citation indexes, and the use of Portal has climbed dramatically over the years. It's one of the most heavily used journals in Muse, in spite of the fact that it's only now just over 7 years old, or just over 6 years old.
And that association with Johns Hopkins University Press was with what many people would be listening to this would know as Project Muse, the online suite of journals.
Right.
And Portal has been
a
part of Project Muse since the inception of Portal.
Since day one, it appeared in Muse right away. But Portal does have a print version, and always has. We don't. There are not that many print subscriptions to it, and most people, I would argue, who read Portal in the Muse environment, the electronic environment. But, there's a hard copy of this journal as well, which still gets some subscribers, particularly individual subscribers who don't have access to Muse.
To a reader of journals who's not a librarian, who's not paying the bills, it could appear that there's no significant difference between getting a journal through Elsevier's Science Direct or getting it through Johns Hopkins Project Muse. What do you think professors and students should know about the relative merits of Project Muse and Science Direct?
Well, I think that Science Direct is a very different kind of publisher, if I can use that word. Muse isn't actually the publisher. Muse contains many things that are not just the Hopkins Press. It's a large commercial venture, whereas Muse is a not-for-profit venture and always has been. As a commercial venture, the cost per bit of information in Science Direct is extraordinarily higher than the similar cost to the subscribers that the profile that Muse has. So I think that there's if price is any measure, the value for a Muse journal is much higher, since you don't have to pay as much to get it. Creates a much greater opportunity. There's a long-standing battle you know, that I guess has to, I have to say, is stretched over the entire 35 years of my career as a librarian and library manager that relates to the acceleration in periodical prices, and I think it's a well-known, well-understood issue, if I may use that euphemism. And I would argue that anything that we can do to create some price competition and price discipline by creating new journals is a good thing, because I, you know, I think that it's, you know, it's palpably ridiculous that publisher of journals should have a 42% profit margin. That's just a tad excessive compared to almost any industry that I know of. But it is the way things are right now, and I think that the whole debate around open access has a great deal to do with this, and very little to do with the merit of any individual journal title, that we are finding that scholarly information is increasingly being priced out of reach. You know, the plain fact is that even the research, members of the research library community, the members of ARL, increasingly are faced with dilemmas about what to retain. We have reduced our journal subscriptions and our database subscriptions to electronic resources over the last 3 years, every single year, in spite of large infusions of new money into the acquisitions budget, simply because inflation has so far outstripped the 3 or 4% rate of increase in acquisitions funding from my administration.
Here at St. Rose, I see an inflation rate from year to year very steadily in the 8 to 10% range.
Yeah, that's invariably the experience. Invariably the experience. I think that it has been the case that books haven't inflated so fast until recent years, and we're starting to see a similar spike there. One of the challenges is, of course, that in some measure our journal cost and database cost, we're cannibalizing book budgets in order to keep up with those, and the result is that the market for the monograph, the scholarly monograph, is in great danger, and the prices are going up because they're being drug along by database and journal prices,
and
particularly in science, technology, and medicine.
And there's Association of Research Library Data, ARL data, that supports that strongly.
Yeah.
I've
seen
the graphs that
unquestionably supports it. You know, I mean, the empirical evidence is very, very strong. And if you look at, you know, there have been any number of studies. If you look at some of the studies, you know, it's clear, too, that, you know, MUSE is just one example of a not-for-profit university press-type publication that is a far greater bargain for the high quality that you get of the journals that are in that database.
I was going to ask you about Spark, and part of what I was going to ask, you've already explained why their activities are important, but can you take a moment to explain what the Spark organization is and what their goals are?
Well, Spark is one would call it a voluntary organization, and it, you know, it is subscribed to by libraries. Some publishers are overt and direct supporters of it, and Spark's primary role has been to, number one, dramatize the challenges of the, particularly of the journal market, and to create opportunities with partners to advance alternatives to the current market structure that we have, to, in some measure, to get us back to the principle that, you know, most journal publishers started with, that the purpose of journal publication was to be sure that there was access to the content, not significant profit margins. And, you know, that I think that's putting it rather, you know, strongly perhaps in some minds, but I think it really represents accurately what Spark is about and what we hope Spark will accomplish.
Does Spark officially promote open access?
I think Spark is a very strong ally to open access, but one would hasten to add that the definition of open access is not a settled matter, and what we mean by open access is highly variable across disciplines. If I might take Portal as an example, Portal can be characterized in some measure as an open access journal because we allow authors to post their publications. And only in the case of institutional repositories do we ask them to even give a nod towards requesting permission, which has always been given freely. But the plain fact is, to get Portal, you got to subscribe to it. You got to subscribe to it as a individual title subscription to the hard copy and or to the Muse database. So it's not open access in the same sense that PLOS is. That is to say that the funding stream for Portal comes from author contributions, and that is put up on the web, and anybody can get to it, whether or not they have contributed to it. I'd say, though, that there are probably going to emerge a number of different models for open access, and Portal is one. And one of the important things to remember is that Portal remains a bargain for the content. And I would say we want to encourage viable and robust journals that continue to be highly price competitive and to represent a fair value for their contents. I think that the definition of open access in some minds is that, well, everything is on the web and everything is for free. But I always hasten to add, as an editor, that I do have a fiduciary responsibility, and Portal costs money. The Hopkins Press has to muster resources. Now, Portal has been, since its first year of publication, at least a break even, and now it shows an excess of income over cost, but that excess is not large, and the press shouldn't surprise us that the press needs that kind of an excess in order to manage its whole journal portfolio.
Do you think some advocates of open access ignore or at least undervalue the role of the publisher and the editor and don't pay enough attention to the genuine costs involved in creating a high quality product?
Well, I think there are voices there that people that are just tend to be, how can I put this, ideological about it and don't really take that into account. But I think by and large most voices, at least in the library community, that are supporters of open access understand that that the viable journal costs money to produce. And it's certainly the case that we know that you have got a there are two polar extremes here. Maybe there's the PLOS version where it is completely supported by the contributions of those people who are published in its pages.
We should take a moment to explain what PLOS. It's Public Library of Science.
Public Library of Science, and its first journal title was PLOS Biology, and the model, at the risk of misspeaking myself here, I think they had some Mellon money to begin and are moving towards a fully self-funded model in which author page charges are what the publication survives on. That is to say, authors provide money when their articles are approved, and that money is what helps PLOS stay in business and do its editorial work and support itself and continue to provide the technology. It's a completely online journal now. I don't know if they still produce a hard copy. But that's a model that works very well, perhaps, in a science area like biology, where virtually everybody who contributes has a grant, a research grant, and or institutional subvention. And some have argued, well, that's the way we ought to do it for all journals. But I think that most of what is published in the world of academic research tends to come from the larger research institutions. And what that says, in effect, is the larger research institution should fund the full advance or the full exposition of their knowledge through journals and other means, and everybody else will get it for nothing. So you have the free rider issue. At the perhaps opposite extreme of open access would be a journal like Portal that really still continues to have a traditional journal profile, but allows its authors to exercise robustly their own copyrights. At the same time, there's a risk in this model because if everything in Portal's covers were immediately available, which I have to say it is not, on the web, the the amount of activity in Muse itself would decline, and that's, you know, that the budgeting model for Muse is that journals are given, awarded, I should say, income based on the amount of activity of the journal title itself. So the fact that Portal is a journal that does better than break even is a function of the fact that people read it online in Muse. And if it were immediately and completely available elsewhere, my guess is that we would have a declining use of it in the Muse environment, which means that although there would be high use of it, it wouldn't be reflected in a way that produced a contribution that allowed for a balanced bottom line.
Is the revenue from Muse sufficient to sustain the journal, or do you need the revenue from the print subscriptions to break even?
The revenue from the print subscription is almost enough to pay for the print subscription. I think it sort of wavers around the line of break even. It has never been enough to support the entire activity of the journal. If it weren't for Muse, the Hopkins Press would be experiencing a significant net loss on a Portal, at least last time I looked at the figures, which was a year ago. So Muse is essential. But, I mean, it's not surprising that Muse is where you're going to get most of our use. I mean, the plain fact is that I guess now we all get aggravated when the journal article we want to see isn't immediately available online, because that has become the modality that we're familiar with, and because of its convenience.
Do you think Hopkins Press will continue creating the print subscription for those who want to receive it that way?
You know, I can't answer that question. We have made the case that, you know, we ought to just forget about it. My board would be okay with doing that, and we've suggested it to them. But I think that they now, you know, there's still the world of sales in which having a sample copy has some impact, believe it or not. You know, putting it out on the table and having people look at it is a way of representing the fact that this is a journal entity. And you may remember that when PLOS Biology first came out, they produced a hard copy of it.
I remember getting the sample issue.
Yeah. And that sample, why did they do that? Well, they did it because that's the conceptual framework that we still operate in some significant measure about journals. Although, you know, when old fuddies like myself are gone, I'm sure that, you know, people will establish journals and never give a second thought to the idea that they need to have a print artifact.
Charles, what do you enjoy most about editing Portal?
Oh, gee. I really have. This is the second time for me. I co-founded another journal with Don Riggs many years ago, an association journal called Library Administration and Management. And I just have had a long-term, personal commitment to the notion of advancing the field through research and expression of best practices, because we are, you know, we're a practice discipline, if you want to call librarianship that. And it's essential to emphasize the exposition of the knowledge that is being developed about and around the what a library is, what librarians do, and what an academic library is as an institution. So I think it's absolutely critical for the success of academic librarianship and for academic libraries to have a strong literature. And, you know, that's as not just a library manager, but as a library school faculty member who has taught for many years, it's just remained a core interest of my own. And so I guess the biggest kick I get out of it is that I've worked and played something of a central role in the creation of an important journal that expresses our profession and expresses the role of academic libraries as institutions within higher education. Well, it's also kind of fun, I have to say, to recruit articles. I think. It's invariably for me, when I'm listening to somebody give a speech, even if it's not fully baked, I think, gee, does this have a core? Is this something important that ought to be heard beyond this little event today of this individual standing up in front of an audience? And how is Portal a place that would serve for that purpose? And lot of the recruiting for journal articles that we've had, I've done simply because of valuing the opportunity to, you know, to spread good thinking, I guess is the best way to describe it. One of the things the portal has done is really emphasized mentoring, and we have become something of a place where we get a lot of neophytes, beginners, who are submitting articles because they know we've welcomed that. And we've done, and I have to attribute the notion that we should have this kind of a profile to Gloriana St. Clair, who with Sue Martin and I founded the journal, that she thought we really needed to do this because instead of just simply throwing a journal article away because it wasn't good enough for publishing now, wasn't really fair if it had potential and there was some way to help the author develop it. So we've emphasized that role. And I think that's been kind of a unique niche that Portal has filled. Those are the, I guess, the principal things that drive me. And I guess, you know, in some measure, as an editor, you've got a bully pulpit. And while I do recruit articles, editorial features, I also do from my board and from others as guest editorials. I do get a chance to spout off every once in a while and say what I think in a very public way that's memorialized, and you know, that's kind of an enviable position to be in.
It sure is. And Charles Lowry, this has been another venue for doing that, and believe it or not, our time has expired. So thank you very much for being my guest on Periodical Radio.
Great talking to you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this installment of Periodical Radio. I'm your host, Steve Black.